now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Ruck, everybody. This is the first of two Rucks this week, and we're coming to you from Northampton Saints. And we usually lie about where we are, but today we've got a cutter in the background cutting the pitch, so you know we are truly at Northampton Saints, one of the great rugby grounds, and in my opinion, the team which came to terms with professional rugby first. We've got a top panel here today of Nick Kane from the Rugby Paper, one of the world's most experienced and veteran journalists, still wearing the jacket he wore when he first became a journalist. Owen Slott from The Times, and I say this without a trace of envy, the UK Rugby Writer of the Year. And Adam Hathaway, Mr. Fleet Street, the man who has worked for more papers in the world, and he recently added the Ankara Times, was it? Did you fight for them in Turkey?
No, Karachi Express was
okay,
the next one.
Okay, okay. Just before we go on to rugby, Adam, that big-nosed bloke Ted in Line of Duty, is he the rat?
He can't be, because the rat is H, and it can't be Hastings. It's too obvious. There's something dodgy about that lawyer, I think.
But what about John? He almost had his head chopped.
Yeah.
What's happened? All right, well, we keep an eye on that, and yeah. If it is Ted, we'll be getting you back to account for yourself.
Well, you hear it first on this podcast, won't you?
Yeah, exactly.
We will break the news.
Okay. Bruce, have you seen the... do you rank this Ted or the big nose boy?
No, I don't. For exactly the reason that Adam said, he's too obvious.
All right, okay. Well, that might not make
tell you we're a smart bunch, aren't we?
Yeah,
that BBC can't put anything over us.
I know.
We saw right through it.
Last weekend was dripping.
You got a big nose, Jones. It could be
I
you
know,
as well.
I'm not as big as Ted.
All right.
Feel me. This weekend's rugby was dripping with great play and controversy. Also, questions being asked, did football-style behaviour arrive at the Ricoh Stadium on Saturday? One of the, at least one, but actually three or four of the Saracens players were abused by the crowd, the Munster crowd throughout. There was a pitch invasion, and also a friend of mine took two kids and left at half-time when he saw one of the Munster men urinating in a pint glass. So, Adam, how did you find it? Was there a bit of a nasty atmosphere there?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Billy Vunipola probably knew what was coming. I think Owen Farrell got dogs abused as well. I don't know what he's done wrong. The pitch invasion afterwards, I didn't realise it wasn't illegal at a rugby ground to run on the pitch. Apparently it's not a criminal offence, but that guy could have had a knife. And we all know what happened to Monica Seles a few years ago.
Nick, I know you were busy there, but did you find it a slightly oppressive atmosphere?
I thought that given the number of tickets that were up for grabs, there was more than a few sort of 12-hour Munster fans there for the day, there for the beer and to play the job. And, you know, particularly when kicks were being taken, Farrell got a fair bit of it, and obviously Billy at the end. So, yeah, it wasn't ideal. There was a bit of... I suppose it's easy to say football culture creeping in, but to a degree it did seem that way.
We'll come back to that in a second, but Owen, we'd like you to major on the Leinster game. Another great performance by Leinster, possibly not quite of the standard of Saracens on the day, but a worthy finalist and a definite contender.
Yeah, I think that the final is going to be outstanding. The Leinster victory was disappointing in that Toulouse never really or didn't get going sufficiently to really challenge. I think we knew who was going to win far too early. It's one of those games where you get to the final 25 minutes and Leinster are seeing it out. I mean, this is all a compliment to Leinster. It wasn't a great entertainment on because of that. It was a shame for the fan and a TV viewer that Toulouse never really got going, but for sure Leinster showed that some of their big players, Johnny Sexton and Sean O'Brien in particular, really look near at their best, close to their best, which they haven't been for a lot this season, and so they will make for an outstanding final. So
we'll come back to you in just a second and ask you who you think will win. Nick?
I just regarding Toulouse, you know, they had the French fly half on the bench. They put a scrum half at fly half in DuPont. And they lose the whole compass of the game as a consequence of it. You know, I mean, Regis Son, the Toulouse coach beforehand, suggested that it was the French way to do something special. Same old cobblers.
Yeah, no, he's right. The most experienced journalist in the history of rugby?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Well,
Cobblers Kane.
Yeah, Cobblers Kane has nailed it. It was preposterous. They got two great halfbacks. They put one on the bench and one not in his best position. So
got you. Okay.
There was another triumph for Steve's favourite coach, Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah, fair play. I never thought they should have sacked him, honestly. Adam, Saracens in terms of individual, some amazing performances there.
Yeah, we know all about the Saracens rock stars, you know, Marrow, Owen Farrell, Billy, Mako, etc. Ben Spencer was fantastic, as you wrote on Sunday, Steve. Very well observed.
Thank you, yeah.
But also some of the sort of non-rock stars. I thought Michael Rhodes had a great game on Saturday, and one guy who never gets a look in, barely gets mentioned, Jackson Ray, was fantastic.
I totally agree there. I mean, he's amazing. He's the only one of the very few who's not on international duty. Well, Nick, anyone stood out for you? Jackson Ray, I think, is a... What, for sheer work rate, Adam?
He never stops working. The thing is, the guys at Saracens have always said to England, just get him in a training session and you'll know what he's about. And he's never got looking.
No, okay. That's too obvious for England, I think. Yeah.
I thought one of the guys who really impressed me, I mean, they lost their talisman, Brad Barrett, at half-time. And I thought that Tompkins, who came on for Barrett, is almost... a Barrett clone, you know. I mean, what he did, he's a bit younger and he's got a bit more dynamism as a consequence, hasn't got Barrett's experience, but just to be able to fill in seamlessly like that, he was involved in the final try in quite a big way, and I just think that's the measure of Saracens in a way. They have this depth and keep on bringing in. He's a homegrown player, so yet another one.
I mean, for me, Ben Spencer has really advanced up the rankings. I mean, I think he's international class beyond any doubt now. I also thought that Liam Williams, who did make one error, I seem to remember, his ability when the ball is aerial is absolutely stupendous. I don't think I've ever seen anyone as good as Liam Williams when the ball's up in the air. But Owen, we're speaking from Saints, where for later in the week we're going to talk to the Saracens and Wasps teams about their Tyrrell's Premier 15 final on Saturday. But Saracens are an amazing club because they're going to tell us about what a lovely environment they've created for the girls. They've got their own high school which they've started. They've got a lot of jealousy, Saracens, but they have got something that's really together and a club that you really want to play for.
I think this is a podcast series actually talking about Saracens and the rights and the wrongs, because they do so much right, as you say. The players love being there. I think you said that you thought the quality of the coaching is outstanding, because a lot of the England Saracens play better when they're playing for their club than they do for their country. Mm. And there is something really special there, but. I find this conversation right at the moment. I don't know what you boys think about. We're going to be talking about Saracens and writing about Saracens a lot for the rest of the season. Yeah. I just find it an awkward conversation because they were exposed for breaking salary cap 4 years ago, and we appear to be going through the same process again now. I want to sit here and compliment and say how great they are, but. But if they're taking an unfair advantage on the rest of the league, then I can't.
Nick?
Well, I've a slightly different perspective on it, because I take what Owen says about Saracens and the fact that three years ago, I think it was, or whatever, that they didn't get any punishment because nothing in the end was proven, I don't think, conclusively.
I think it was. They just
it was swept away. Yeah, yeah, sure. But I don't think that there is a team in the Premiership that at some stage has not broken the salary cap. I'd be stunned.
That doesn't make it all right now, though.
Doesn't make it right. I agree with you. But it does lend a perspective to it, which is important.
Owen, have you seen anything in the most recent allegations which you could have put before a lawyer before you wrote it? Because I haven't. I think there's a lot of innuendo, but no one's actually come out and proven to say the structures which they've got put in place and the procedures are definitively outside the laws.
No, I haven't seen the documentation, but we do know that Premiership Rugby have looked at it and have put out a statement saying we're not happy with what we've found and we're looking at it further. I mean, that's they're having an inquiry into it. You know, if they find that it's all above board, then I will celebrate the club as much as before.
It is interesting, though, isn't it, that Premiership Rugby are following in the footsteps of the Daily Mail, who did the investigation into it. It is not a Premiership Rugby investigation.
True. Adam?
Well, I think some clubs who are calling for Saracens to be crucified ought to be careful what they wish for, because I'm sure they're not the only club in the Premiership who's over the limit. Might be wrong, but probably not.
It's a very Easter way of putting it. Crucified. I've got a theory, in fact, not a theory, it's an opinion. In fact, it's fact, it's more than my opinion, that Mark McCall and his coaching staff are the best coaching group and the best head coach in the sport anywhere at the moment. The way they, for instance, at half time realised that they wanted to keep O'Mahony and Tyburn out of it by whizzing through the breakdown. Tackle, win it straight away. That's how they scored their two tries in the second half. Was masterly. And I think that McCall should be in line, not that he'd go, for any national job that comes up in the next 10 years.
Yeah, for sure. I see Mark quite a lot. I can't see him taking an international job because he doesn't really like the limelight. But that coaching group, as an Englishman, I'd have no complaints at all if they moved him lock, stock and barrel to Twickenham.
No. Owen?
No, I agree. Again, there's two ways of looking at it. One, they have a team that produces amazing rugby. Well, there's a reason for that. They've got more international players, more England players than any other club in the country. So you could say, oh, well, they should do. But the other side of that is now most of those players they have developed themselves. Most of the players who were world class have come through their own academy. They have done some outstanding things in the world of player development. That is where they are really ahead.
Yeah. I agree. I think that this is a truly great team. And I think that sometimes, you know, a team of this sort isn't treasured enough. People should go and watch this team.
This is where I agree. I think it's a scandal on their marketing department, whatever. I mean, why are there only 16,000 people watching Saracens in their European semi-final at the weekend?
No, absolutely. I agree. But, you know, I mean, I think that if I said anything on the podcast, I'd say go, if you're a rugby fan, go and watch this team. Catch them while you can.
Agreed. Owen, it's going to be a great final. It's arguably the final that everyone wanted. Oh, well, actually, if you're Saracens, you probably want to play someone useless and Leinster. But it's going to be a great final. Do you got any initial tendencies as to which way it would go?
Yeah, I just my inclination is that it will go Saracens' way. I think that they have greater strength across the board marginally. I think. They have raised their game in Europe more consistently than Leinster this season. Leinster have lost Dan Levy, which seems to be important, and they are reliant on Johnny Sexton being at his best and at his fittest, which is not something that you can go to with any certainty.
Nick, where would you go? I mean, we don't know what the runners and riders are at the moment, but from the evidence of the weekend.
Yeah, I lean towards Saracens. One of the things that struck me about Leinster and about Ireland is that there's a fatigue factor. Quite why, given the fact that they're able to rest their players, you know, for half of the season, I don't know. And that's my only reservation is that Saracens have got current business, which is pressing in the Premiership, and Leinster might have a little bit of wind in their sails towards the end of the season.
Adam, who you think you will be hailing as the winner in the Vladivostok Argus?
I'm with Saracens. I think they'll really go after Sexton. And they'll just have too much for Leinster. The only problem I can foresee is that Saracens might not have got a home premiership semi-final by the time of the European final sewn up. So how McCall rotates his squad is going to be interesting.
So you say that they've got Exeter the week before the final.
Yeah.
And Leinster have a week off that week. So you're saying the issue is that Saracens will be obliged to play a decent team the week before. Or they'll find that an issue they have to wrestle with.
Or possibly do what they did. I know they lost, do what they did against Bristol and put all the rock stars on the bench.
Blimey, and when you come to think of that, where's the one place you don't want to go before the European Cup final and you have to win, and that's Exeter. But anyway, I think that's given a fair old chewing. Let's be fair, Leinster are an absolutely magnificent side. They've got a certain grace about them. They've got a certain brilliant technique, but also great forward. So what could possibly be better? Okay, just slightly more domestic matters now. On Saturday, it's the Judgment Day at the Principality Stadium, when the four Welsh clubs front up. Ospreys play Cardiff, but before that, the Scarlets play the Dragons. A big deal. They're expecting 60,000 people, which is a decent attendance, because some of their attendances are absolutely pitiful. I read one of the Welsh journalists in the week saying, why is Saracens don't bring more people to the game? Well, Saracens have 10,000 at home, and it's growing all the time, and they've only been there 3 years. Well, it's more than any of the four Welsh clubs have got, and they've been there about 140 years. So it's very odd. Ospreys and Cardiff is a big game, and so is the other. But there is one thing. None of these teams are likely to qualify for the knockout stages of the Pro 14. Now, not to have anyone really contending in Europe is something, Nick, but not to be in the Pro 14, which is fairly weak in places, that's shameful, surely.
Yeah, it's a staggering indictment of what's going on with the Welsh regions, and just how lacklustre the whole thing is. You know, the sense that, you know, I mean, people talk about promotion and relegation. There's none of that in this league, and it's a moribund league as a result. But you know, people drive their own standards to a degree, and in fact, to a large degree, and that's not happening at these at the Welsh regions at the moment. Other than the Scarlets.
I mean, you know, you're a young and fresh-faced lad, not like the rest of us. But there was a time when Welsh fixtures were just absolutely monumental, and Welsh teams against England often won them. But you know, even you with your tender years must know that we're missing something with the lack of a really outstanding Welsh club.
It goes back surely to the recasting of Welsh professional rugby and the dying of the clubs or the subjugating of the clubs into regional rugby. I mean, does it not? Now, I grew up sort of hearing, reading and occasionally seeing these amazing Welsh clubs and the history. It's great disappointment as a professional journalist that I've so rarely seen anything to stir the passion from Welsh regional rugby in the professional era.
Adam, you're notably anti-Welsh in all your all your writings, and hate going over the Severn Bridge. Yep. Except you go over now because it's free, but you always hated them. You must be loving this.
Well, I'm not crying about it for sure.
So he's admitted it.
But I tell you what, one thing it does, we've said this before, it just proves what a brilliant coach Gatland is, because he can get a grand slam out of these blokes.
Oh, absolutely. This is what the marketeers say about Judgment Day. The pageantry and passion at the Principality Stadium added to the sheer international quality of the team, testing themselves in the white-hot derby environment.
What a load of cobblers.
I don't know what he's talking about there, but it's certainly not rugby. But look, this is the day. And the sad thing is that if Treviso beat Zebra with a bonus point on the weekend, which they could well do and they're favoured to do, then no Welsh teams will qualify. The only significance of the results is that Ospreys and Cardiff, the winner of that, may just be able to qualify for Europe next year, but in the intricacies of the qualifying procedure. So, wish them well, but I think if it was Newport, Cardiff, Swansea and Llanelli, there'd be more interest and more passion, but I'd definitely be keeping an eye on that one. Nick, your rugby paper on the weekend came up with an interesting story. On the front page, by the way. Did you write it? I just didn't catch the bar. No, seriously, the RFU, with banner headlines, this was, the RFU is going to slash by 8 million, the budget that they give to the community game in England. Part of the huge budgetary cuts that they're needing, but 8 million off the budget, taking it down to still 30 million. I mean, painful for the game. Is that the right way to do it? A, is it painful? B, is that the right way to do it? We'll come to the other two in a minute.
As to whether it's the right way or not, I'm not sure. But what does need to be answered is what has happened to the £30 million windfall from the World Cup in 2015. Why hasn't a significant amount of that gone to the community game, actually offsetting this funding crisis that they've now that they're now in, and that is entirely, I think, of their own making? It's financial mismanagement to a degree. It's speculation. I mean, Stephen Brown, I spoke to, who's obviously left as chief executive. He said back in October that the shortfall would be 4 to 5 million, and that it would, the implication was that it would be shared between the community and the pro game. It now seems that it appears that the shortfall is double that, and it is entirely going to fall on the community game, and that is just total mismanagement.
It's terrible news for Steve Granger, whose job it is to boost up numbers, and it generally does it very well. We'll come to that in a minute, but it really is disastrous at a time when the community game in terms of second, third and fourth teams is really struggling. Obviously not in terms of girls, beach rugby, mixed ability rugby, fantastic, but there is a heartland is going. Owen, swinging cuts and the RFU not having a good time at all at the moment.
This is... We've sort of seen this coming, because it was about a year ago that the numbers started trickling through, that they were 30 million over budget or whatever it was for the rebuilding of the East Stand. I think the questions have been asked multiple times as to where the numbers have gone so far wrong, and as Nick said, the windfall from the World Cup. How can we be 3 years on and suddenly be so short of cash that it just doesn't add up? If you have a windfall, then you don't spend it, then suddenly say you got nothing left. They know how the quadrennial system of rugby works, so they know that in a World Cup year, which is the year coming up, they won't get any autumn international, so their income will be down again. But I hear that they're expecting next year to have a huge hole to fill as well. It's very poor, and the game in the community game is suffering.
Adam, you're a grassroots man in terms of your sport. A disaster, but B, there's a RFU council there.
Yep,
I do. 57 of them.
Yep.
Now, the RFU have already got a board, a chief executive and an executive all around them. They've got the professional people there, but they do have a top-line board. Why are these 57 people on expenses, having international tickets, roaming around the world at someone else's expense? Some of them no doubt do brilliant work. Do they need 57 of them when they're not really in the chain of command anymore?
Well, if you can tell me what they do, then let me know, because I don't, but they do like a lunch.
Are there still 57?
Yeah.
Hundreds of different.
Sorry, that wasn't perfect.
57. It was Will Carling's favourite.
It was. Yeah.
Look, it must have fluctuated. A couple of them must have popped their clogs by now.
But they get replaced.
That's good.
I think it's actually more now.
I've met some people. And they've been lovely, well-meaning. They have given up their time, but really does at the time of you should to cut. coaches out there who are responsible for bringing people in. To be honest, it's ridiculous. And don't forget, the RFU commissioned a big survey with a top company who came to the conclusion that the council were worse in use and should go. So the RFU then ignored the survey they'd commissioned, Adam.
Well, and these guys who are getting cut and the clubs, the grassroots clubs that are going to be affected, the same grassroots clubs that the RFU are turning around and saying to, we'll charge you £130 to get into Twickenham.
Yeah. I mean, one of the areas where you actually see the effect of these cuts is that talking about a 35% cut in funding to referees. So in terms of being able to fund the referees.
They should cut them more.
But it means that from National 1 down, now they're going to have to fund their own referees. Yeah. National 1 down.
Well, if you fund your own referee, if I have to fund my own referee, I'll bring my own referee along. Well, thank you very much. That was funny. Even Jack, our producer's laughing at that.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Premiership lads, Slotty looking at reading his mobile phone while I'm talking.
I know, it's very brilliant.
I could ask him a major question.
Well, I've got important people contacting me.
All right, sorry. Who are they? Who?
I can't say so.
Okay,
yet.
All right, okay.
Your missus. Premiership. Told her not to bother me during the podcast every week.
All right, I was now national. Premiership. This week we're back at the Prem action Friday. Yet another must win game, Newcastle and Saints. Should Newcastle lose that game and should Worcester beat Gloucester on Sunday, it is almost all up for Newcastle. It is absolutely a must-win game. Agreed? And Nick, where will your heart lie, Newcastle and Saints?
Well, it will lie with Newcastle. I'd like to see the fight at the tail end go on for the entire season to the last game. Yeah. As somebody who's not going to be affected in terms of income, but I would say that I saw Saints win at Quinn's a couple of weeks ago, and they're a dangerous side. Yeah,
that was Nick. I'm all right, Jack.
He's not going to be affected financially. Oh, indeed. I'm so relieved.
Is there something? Is there something slightly weak about the whole division in that? Should Wasps beat Saracens this week? And Saracens might field a weakened team. It's unlikely, but it's certainly not out of the question. Wasps could well go up to fourth in the table when this is seen as one of their most disastrous seasons in living memory.
Oh, I just think that's a reflection on this weird and brilliant season of yeah. Gallagher Premiership Rugby, where clubs have, their fluctuating fortunes have been fascinating to watch. The standards have been very close, so anyone you lose your grip a little bit, like Wasps did, and then suddenly you're losing six games in a row or something. Then you clamber back on and you build your momentum again. And So many clubs have been rising and falling. It's been extraordinary. So, I mean, if they get into the top four, then they've dug themselves out brilliantly and they'll have earned it.
I should reflect that I went to Newcastle and Leicester and the same weekend I saw Worcester play at home. Never got a word in the paper about it, but there we are. I enjoyed my trip. And Newcastle were a really fine side. Worcester next day were absolutely superb. So I think it is a crazy old thing. I think you could be, the team that goes down with a bit of luck could have finished fifth or something like that. But Adam, there's a sort of growing story with Gloucester because they're not so sort of seventh, eighth or ninth anymore. They're third. They got Worcester this week and should win. First of all, great news that Gloucester are back in the fray after all these years.
Is it?
He doesn't like anyone, does he?
It's all just like a whale stretch across the seven.
Goes to the West Coast.
Okay, right. What clubs do you like?
You get as far as Holland, he starts liking them.
Gloucester are improving. They have benefited from not having any internationals in their squad. So they've done well during the autumn and the Six Nations. I think this, what's going on at the bottom where four or five teams potentially could have been in trouble, it just shows that it is the two big dogs, Saracens and Exeter, then the rest of Gloucester, probably the best of the rest.
This is like the torture trial with the Richardsons. They never come, they never leave North London. Okay, that's about it. I think we covered everything brilliantly there, even though we say it ourselves. Thanks very much for listening to us. One more thing. On the weekend, in the distant corner of the paper, was a story about half-game rugby. That is an RFU invention, creation, which becomes absolutely, definitively a statute next year. Every time you take your boys out to play, or girls, in a match between the ages of 7 and 18, every member of the squad has to have at least half the game. Sounds lovely, sounds pastoral. I think it's execrable and very dangerous, but am I being alarmist, Owen?
I disagree with you wholeheartedly on this one.
Right.
I think maybe you're right at the like under 17s, under 18s, top level. But how many times have I seen a kid who's a substitute who gets on for 10 minutes at the end who would rather have been playing in the second team rather than the sub for the first team, for instance? Or actually might decide I'd rather go and play football next week. Or might be a kid who's grown late and therefore can't compete at the age of 14 or 15 and drifts away from the game. So I think there is more positive than negative on this.
Okay, I don't see any positives at all. And that's after I've been through the age groups three times from 8 to 18. I can tell you, when the boys reach 14, they are all dying to play league rugby. And secondly, what is wrong with having a league game 1 week and next week you have a friendly which you play everybody? Therefore, you keep everybody happy. Because the problem is with this is that you're going to cheese off way more people than you absorb. Because the 12 players who've trained, sacrificed, worked their guts out, gone to the gym to try and make the team successful.
Have your reserve players, your substitutes, not trained and worked hard as well?
Isn't
a club or a team about the whole lot? If you're good enough to be in the match day squad, if you're 16th or 17th, then surely you should be good enough to play in the match.
The whole point of selection is you pick your best team. Therefore, if you're making loads of subs, and you could be making up to 11 substitutes, it means that you're bringing on 11
inferior
players.
Who's
going to
have 11 substitutes? I mean, that's...
Well, most people, because very, very few teams have two sides.
Absolutely. If you're having less subs, then you will have a second side because people will be getting a proper game elsewhere. No club's going to want to have 11 subs, are they, and have them rolling over at half-time.
But you have to. You have to. If you want them all there, you have to. Most people cannot run two teams. 99% of clubs and increasing number of schools cannot do it. So you have to bring them all on.
I have a question. Have they actually trialled this? Because what we have with laws all the time is the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, exactly.
With everything
that's
going to
happen. They have trialled it. And if you saw the survey about the trial, you'd think they based it on this.
Well, they have trialled it, and their conclusions, and I don't know quite how they got to them, were that if you play half-game rugby, the players are six times happier with it.
Mm.
I mean, that's what they say.
Six times.
Yeah. Like our listeners are six times happier than people who listen to other podcasts.
What they say exactly.
I mean, it's hard to measure exactly, but it's definitely correct.
What they say is if you have half a game rather than not playing and standing on the touchline, you're six times happier. Wow. They had to pay for that survey, Adam. Mm.
Well, when I first read this, I thought it was quite a good idea. But then I read Steve's piece online coming up here.
Well, you weren't persuaded by it.
Well, strangely, I half agreed with him.
What do you mean half?
Well, particularly with the thing about...
half a game. Don't say half. Say a quarter. Yeah. Be
and
honest.
They're playing friendlies. I think that was a good idea.
It's what everybody's ever done. It's what we did at Maidenhead. We were the only team in the whole of Britain who had two Colts teams. I normally give everyone the final word, but this time I'm having it, even though I respect your wrong opinions. That was Nick Kane of the Rugby Paper, Owen Slott of the Times, Adam Hathaway of the Bulgaria Bugle. We'll be back on Thursday with another podcast. We'll be featuring the Tyrrells Premier 15 final, which I've now decided is between Saracens and Harlequins. Thanks a million.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.